This is a special broadcast of the meeting of the Institute for Historical Review, March 6th, 2010. Brought to you by the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network. This is the first speech by Tomislav Sunik.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Mark, for your eulogies. Very nice indeed, and I really appreciate being here, and thank you all for being here. I hope indeed, Mark, that this place will soon turn into a think tank, and I also hope that this will be, hope not the only one, a place for protecting our free speech. And I'm very grateful indeed for what you've been doing over the last couple of years. You forgot one thing. I'm also a U.S. citizen, and I'm glad to announce that a while ago I've been accepted on the board of directors of A3P, and I'd like to thank my friends, my future comrades, and I'm here of service. Thank you very much. I hope we shall have a chance to chat about those things a little bit more later on. But right now I'd like to speak for about 20 minutes about the plight of ethnic Germans in what used to be communist Europe, Central and Eastern Europe. Before I proceed, I'd like to tell you that just about 10 days ago I was a guest speaker. I was invited to the conference in St. Louis, Missouri at Community College St. Louis, Missouri. And I was surprised, first and foremost, by the invitation. And secondly, I was surprised by the turnout. There were a couple of other speakers. There was a gentleman from the State Department, believe it or not. There was a gentleman from War College. I forgot his name. And there was a bunch of folks. There were quite a few of students. And there were also quite a few of, I was surprised also, quite a few of German Americans. I didn't know, I didn't realize that St. Louis in Missouri is a full of German Americans, and I really felt at home. And as it turned out, quite a few of those German Americans living and residing in St. Louis are originally from the place where I now live, where my in-laws live in Croatia, or what used to be ex-Yugoslavia. So this is a very strange encounter, because I came across people who literally lived not very far from where my in-laws now live in Croatia. So I was also surprised, because as you certainly know, we very seldom hear about this other side of what happened during the Second World War and after. We very seldom hear about the plight of Germans, civilian Germans, after the Second World War. I'm sure you're aware of the fact that the terms of engagement after the war are quite different from the terms of engagement during the war. And it was a very moving event. And in my afterwards, in fact, I gave three speeches. The first one was a big one, and then I had two short ones. The round table was very, very good. We had quite a few of questions from the audience. And I, as far as I can recall, I made a statement, among others, it was very well received, that we have to have a more balanced approach in our history books as far as the Second World War is concerned. And in my conclusion, I will tell you what actually we are dealing with. We are dealing here with a very peculiar type of victimology, which one way or another clashes with the other victimology, with the Jewish victimology. So this is certainly of major importance, not just for understanding the past, but also for understanding what's going to happen in the future. And to say the least, I'm happy that this was, to my knowledge, I know that Mark Weber was talking about this topic at some point, but this was on the official level, I should almost say classy level. We were welcomed by the dean. There were also some representatives of the local media from St. Louis. And I was very happy indeed, I can tell you. Now back to the ethnic Germans, and I'll try to synthesize, and I'd like to condense this massive topic as much as possible. For that matter, I've written about this topic, and I would be more than happy later on to refer you to some of my pieces dealing with that topic, or for that matter, some of the books. I forgot to mention also that the whole event was sponsored by Alfred de Zayas. Probably the name does not sound familiar to some of you, but I'm sure Mark knows about the name. He's a major guy. He's a quote-unquote politically correct figure, older emeritus professor, who wrote very, very much about the tragedy and the genocide against the Germans, civilian Germans, after the Second World War. Now, let me first clarify some concepts, ladies and gentlemen. When we talk about German or ethnic Germans, I'm sure some of you are confused. You don't hear the word ethnic English or ethnic British or, for that matter, ethnic Irish or ethnic French living or residing in Central or Eastern Europe. You will find this term ethnic Germans or Volksdeutschen, as the Germans say, quite often, especially in relation to Central and Eastern Europe. And I'm sure some of you may be shocked. There used to be quite a few of ethnic Germans residing and living, guess where? In Kazakhstan. If you're a little bit familiar with Afghanistan and a little bit of Uzbekistan, where the GIs are now fighting the war against the Taliban, yes, indeed, this is where the ethnic Germans settled. In fact, the Germans settled in the 18th century during the Tsarina Katarina. So this is just to give you an idea of how far and how scattered the German population was at some point. To give you some clue, some layman's clue, if I may, take a look at the map of Europe. If you take a good look at the map of Europe, one thing it will strike in your eyes, namely that Germany, or the German people for that matter, does not have what? Precise borders. Unlike France, which is more or less well-shaped, unlike England or United Kingdom. Unlike the United States of America, this is not the case with the German people. They're located in the very center of Europe. For that matter, they border on the Atlantic, they border on the Adriatic coast. But the point is, however much they are homogeneous, historical, they've been very, very homogeneous because of their language, spoken from Südtirol, from South Tyrol, all the way up to Königsberg, which is now in the Russian jurisdiction, Kaliningrad. They have never had demarcated and well specific borders. And on the average, over the last 400 years, the borders of the German Reich or the German state have been changing every 40 years. You're aware of that just 25 years ago, German borders changed. When the wall came down, then the Eastern, or what used to be the Communist Germany, was fused with the Western Germany. And this is still the case. And I'm not ruling out that 10 years or 20 years down the road, some other areas of Germany, what is today Germany, may be lost because of demographic and racial situation and so on and so forth. What you need to know is that we have to make a sharp distinction here between Reichs-Germans, or for that matter, Germans who lived in the core of Germany, and those Germans who lived outside the jurisdiction of Germany. And we are talking about 12 million, and this is a very conservative number, 12 million Germans who were thrown out, literally, out of the jurisdiction of different states, including Russia, ex-Yugoslavia, Czechoslovakia, Poland. I could go on and on. I'm not here into body counts, and I think I would like to avoid that, but just for your information. So we are talking approximately about 12 million civilian Germans who were thrown out of their homelands after the Second World War. The overall number of Germans who perished during the Second World War and after, in other words, from 1938 until 1950, is about 8 million people. If I were to ask you now, just from the top of my head, could you tell me the number of how many Jews were killed during the Second World War? I'm sure you would give me the right number right away. I'm not going to delve into that. I have my reasons why I don't want to deal with mathematics here, but rather with historiography. And I'm sure many of you don't even have any idea how many GIs perished or died or were killed during the Second World War, right? About 500,000. 500,000. But none of you, and I don't want to sort of prejudge, and I don't want to insinuate anything, but very few people know that more than 8 million, and this is a very conservative number, 8 million Germans, both civilians and soldiers, perished or died or were killed from 1938 until 1950. More than 4 million Germans perished actually after 1944. Then the Germans, both on the civilian side and the military sides, they had terrible losses after that. Overall, since 1945 until 1950, about 3 million German civilians perished of malnutrition or disease or simple killings, so different sorts of mistreatments. And I certainly need to specify this, because this, if we take this into account, this plight of Germans from literally from the Baltics all the way down to the Balkans, where they once lived in their former, in their ancestral homelands, then it's certainly this whole idea of victimology, of the modern victimology, sheds a different light on the events of the Second World War. So I would certainly urge you, encourage you to take into account the plight of ethnic Germans in those areas of Central and Eastern Europe. Now, specifically, ethnic Germans outside the jurisdiction of Germany, and specifically in the area where I come from Croatia, or let's say the Danube area, I don't know how much you know about geography, the Danube area, until 1944 had 1.5 million Germans, 1.5 million Germans in a very condensed area. Right now there are none. So all this story about ethnic cleansing and all this big sentimental outcry about how people are being persecuted, and even to some extent we can say those stories about the recent conflict in the Balkans just do not hold water. They don't sound very convincing, considering the fact what happened to ethnic Germans in the aftermath of the Second World War. This was truly a genocide, we can say, on a gigantic scale. I don't want to go into those gory facts, how many women were raped, about 2 million German women from Königsberg all the way down to Karlovac, which is now in Croatia, and what the Soviet soldiers did, but not just the Soviet soldiers, but also the American soldiers. The bottom line is that again, we are dealing here with a very peculiar type of a genocide, a very peculiar type of ethnic cleansing, and this is the main point, which was completely swept under the carpet, we can say under the red carpet. So we may want to ask a rhetorical question. Who did the forgetting? Why is this forgotten genocide? Why are we not talking about this more extensively? Who defines the genocide in the first place? I'm sure you're familiar that according to the UN Convention of 1948, genocides are not subject to the statute of limitation. In other words, if crime was committed by the Soviet soldiers, or for that matter American soldiers, in the Rhine Basin — are you familiar a little bit with the Rhine Basin, when hundreds of thousands of German soldiers were starved literally by American soldiers? And I guess those, of course, we need to raise a question. Can anybody be called to account? Can anybody be held responsible for what happened? And apparently, as of now, nobody is being held responsible. In Eastern Europe, we have a very peculiar case. And I don't want to bother you too much with those legal issues, but this is a very tough issue now in Czechia, to some extent in Hungary, to some extent in Serbia, not so much in Croatia. Those laws, in fact, those clauses rather accept, or what they call the decrees, those decrees adopted by anti-fascists or communists shortly after the Second World War in Czechoslovakia, like the Beneš decrees. I don't know if the name sounds familiar. Beneš, who was a former president, a liberal-minded president, who didn't last long because he was kicked out of power by communists in Czechia in 1947-48. And then in Serbia, all those decrees stipulating the stripping of German citizens of their statehood, of their former statehood, are still valid. So in other words, Germans nowadays who live their descendants who live in Germany proper, or for that matter in St. Louis, or for that matter in Argentina, if you wish, they cannot retrieve their property that they lost in what was once Yugoslavia, for that matter, they cannot retrieve that property from Sudetenland. Sudetenland is the western part of Czechia nowadays. I'm probably bombarding you here with the topography of death, so to speak, which may sound a little bit strange to some of you, but this is a very tough issue. So the gentleman before me, he was talking about Palestinians and how they were dehoused and in fact how they were dislodged from their homes. But basically we are dealing with the same issue, if not even worse. 12 million people, can you imagine? It's a large number of folks. On a somewhat different level, we often talk about foreigners, and I'm not going to speculate, you can take a wild guess what I mean by that. We often think, oh, how are we going to get rid of this and that, there are too many foreigners and this and that, but believe it or not, 12 million people were dislodged in 12 months from their homelands. So everything is possible in history where there is a will. You can take a wild guess, I'm not going to make moral judgments about that, but think about this, because literally what happened in Sudetenland, there were about 2.5, and this is a conservative number, in Sudetenland in 45, when the Soviet army marched in, of course, the Americans were on the other side, so they knew very well what was going on. 2.5 million Germans literally had to clear the premises. So as of now, and I can't give you the exact number, but every third family in Germany, every third family has somebody who has had relatives or ancestors in what is today Poland or Slovakia or Czechia or Serbia or for that matter Croatia. I hope you can follow me on that, ladies and gentlemen. Let me now, because we don't have much time, I would like to stress a little bit this concept of victimology and what exactly victimology means nowadays. Of course, we are all being bombarded by one definite form of victimology or victimhood, if you wish, on a daily basis. You open up the New York Times, you open up the Washington Post, or for that matter, if you open up the Le Monde or any European journal, you will find inevitably at least one minor reference to this big Holocaust or to the suffering of the Jews. And again, as I said, I'm not going to make any value judgments because thinking and tinkering with those numbers is a felony in Europe. You're aware of that fact. And I have a deep appreciation for that. But the irony of history is that I keep asking myself a question. Why is this obvious, empirically proved genocide or ethnic cleansing on a massive scale not being openly discussed in public? If it is, it's very rarely, it's very seldom. And of course, it is. You don't have to be a historian, you don't have to have a PhD in political science or history, but the first question that would cross my mind would be, well, there must be something in it. Why are we constantly being told about one form of suffering, one version of suffering, and why do we never hear about the 70,000 people, 70,000 ethnic Germans were killed by Yugoslav Tito, East Yugoslav partisans, after the Second World War, I'm talking 45-46, in ex-communist Yugoslavia. How come we never hear that the Czechs, very peaceful, very musically minded people, that they killed over 250,000 civilians on their trek back to Germany, to Bavaria, because of course they had to flee from them. And they were just dumping them into Vltava River, you know. So those things we never hear in the newspapers. If we do hear it, then it just comes as a shock. Well, I would like to conclude this, that each victimology, including the Jewish victimology, is by nature very conflictual. It does not lead to a peaceful environment. It does not lead to consensus. It does not create the environment for discussion, for open debate. Each victimology, regardless if it's a Croatian victimology or the German victimology, is anchored in a vilification of the culprit. So the bad guys, the German guy, we have sort of grown up with this imagery that the Krauts are bad people and they did most of the killing. What the Germans say, the Täter, the people who were perpetrators. We could not possibly imagine or even conceive that the Germans were also victims of this conflict. And we just hear the one side. So in my view, this will certainly have very bad consequences, not just for the future history writing, or let's call it the historiography or hagiography, we can put it that way. It will certainly have very bad consequences in the years to come as far as our general conceptualization of the world events is concerned. I would like to stop here, ladies and gentlemen. I certainly would like to take some specific questions. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, I have a few questions. He's covered a lot of ground, but yes.
Sir, please.
So, if I understand you right, what the folk Germans or the ethnic Germans could really be likened to a German diaspora.
Right, exactly.
Is that fair?
That's it. And please keep in mind geography. The Germans often say geography is our Schicksal, our destiny. Because Germany, again, unlike England, unlike the United States of America, unlike France, is a very undefined area, very geopolitically very undefined. So since, if you wish, since the 30 Years' War, since the 17th century, the Germans have been scattering all around Eastern Europe as far away as Kazakhstan. And of course, some of them went overseas. So you don't find the same phenomenon in France, or for that matter in the United Kingdom, because those countries are much more geographically defined. They are specific. They have very well-defined borders. This is not the case with Germany, which still one-third of its territory belongs now to Poland and to Czechia and to Russia as well, Kaliningrad, for instance, or Königsberg. There was Immanuel Kant, the great philosopher, was born there. This was a royal city. Dansk, you have heard of Dansk. Dansk was 100% German. Now it's called Dansk. It was Danzig. You know, so it was not a city. The Germans didn't drop from the moon. They lived there for quite some time. Sir, yes, please.
I'd like to mention that for those who would like to pursue the subject in more detail, there's a very good relatively recently published book on the subject called After the Reich.
After the Reich.
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Who is the author?
I wish I could remember.
Please. After the Reich.
It would be a good book for the IHR to carry.
Yes.
Frankly.
Yes, sir.
You seem to be very careful of not saying anything about the Holocaust.
Right, sir.
Although you're an American citizen.
Yes, sir.
And originally from Croatia, Yugoslavia, etc. You could be prosecuted in Germany if you went into Germany for saying anything here.
Yes, it happened with the American citizens already. It happened also with non-Europe, with Australian citizens, whom I know very well. So basically, but for me personally, this is not the issue itself. I'm not into mathematics. I'm into historiography, if you see what I mean. I'm looking more at this. Of course, we know that Holocaust is a civic religion nowadays, which has affected us not just in terms of conceptualizing history, but also in our daily life, if you see what I mean. I'm much more concerned with that. I'm looking at this as a very curious postmodern phenomenon, but I'm not going to go into figures.
Is it that curious, though, that this kind of thing is not talked about any more than the fact that the American Indians were run off of, their Stone Age people run off their land by a superior culture, and they just say, well, the Germans lost the war. Victor's right, the history, and...
Well, I agree with
probably
you.
Probably the next turn... Maybe the next war the truth will come out.
Yeah, that might be the case, sir. Sure. Any more questions? Yes, Mishko, please.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago we had a conversation with he was from Germany, but from up north there. He was a journalist, and he was at the event in Dresden, March of several
sure.
weeks ago, and it was for, 65 years ago it happened. And the question, Thomas, is that it seems like a lot more people nowadays are starting to stand up, but they're being very careful with their words. And during our conversation, we broadcasted this a couple weeks ago on our network, and he said that everything that the media said, that there was only 200 or 300 people there, and it was all just the remainder was the left. Well, the reality was it was 10,000 Germans, women, children going on trains into Dresden, somber, like they were going to a funeral. And the whole media, the way they portrayed it, was that they were all neo-Nazis, all this. But the conversation that we had with them is that it seems to be that there's nationalism coming about because you can only stick your thumb on somebody for so long. And are you seeing that with the folks that you're talking to?
You mean the ethnic Germans? I'm sorry.
Well, in general, from Czechoslovakia all the way up?
I'll talk about this in the next segment, definitely.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Visit the Institute for Historical Review at ihr.org and visit VOR at reasonradionetwork.com.